Hey, I'm Roberta Blevins, and this is Life After MLM, a podcast where we work to end the stigma of failure in an industry systemically designed for you to fail. Join us as we dive into the real-life stories of survivors, experts, and advocates to debunk the common myths and fallacies of cults, scams, and multi-level marketing. Hey, Hunbots and Hunbros. This episode is going up a little extra early on Patreon because I am going on an overnight hike. I'm doing it. I am hitting the trail and I am camping out in the wilderness and I'm just going to do the dang thing. I mean, adventure awaits. So I'm pulling the plug and I'm going to do it. I'm very, very excited. I leave in the morning and I'll be back in a couple days. So if you want to follow along, I will be posting to Instagram and TikTok, perhaps, if I have internet. I have my pack. I want to say thank you to my friend Kathy, who I know listens to the show, for letting me borrow some of her gear so that I could do this and not splurge on a bunch of stuff that I don't even know if I'm going to like it, you guys. I'm probably going to like it though, right? We'll see. But thank you to Kathy for letting me borrow some gear. I'm really just of a lot of dopamine, like racing through me right now, but also a little bit of anxiety. It was raining earlier. I think the rain is gone, but that doesn't mean the mud is gone. I don't know. You know, when I get back next week, you will hear the update in the housekeeping. So you're just going to have to wait or follow along on Instagram, I guess. I want to say thank you to our newest Patreon member, Paul Ford, and let you guys know that the MLM conference videos are up. Thank you to Michelle and Mallory. They were the ones that went ahead and edited everything and got that all up in record time so that you guys can watch that. I will throw the links to those videos in the show notes as well if you are interested in watching those. They're pretty fun. Definitely check out the social media because it worked darn hard. I would really appreciate the support. This episode is with Emily Lynn Paulson, the author of the book that's coming out in May called Hey Hun. We talk about a couple heavy topics, including how MLM is dripping in white supremacy and sort of approach that from, I promise, a not scary angle. So do not feel the tension. Just it's okay. We're okay. It's a great conversation, I promise. And we also talk about publishing a book and how to pre-order Hey Hun before it comes out. So I'm going to get to packing and make sure that I have everything ready to go. And you will hear from me next week. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of Life After MLM. We have a super special guest today. Hey Hun, it's Emily Paulson. How are you?
Hi, Roberta. Glad to be back.
I am so excited to have you here. You briefly sort of, I don't know if you mentioned it when you were on last year that you were working on this, but you have a book coming out in a couple months. And so you're here to talk about it. I'm so excited. You sent me an advanced PDF version of it. I had so much fun reading it and making all these notes. And oh my gosh, like I just really, really enjoyed the book so much. I can't say enough good stuff about it.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
So let's get into it. If you don't know who Emily Lynn Paulson is, she was on the show last year. She talked about her journey with sobriety and through this MLM that she was in. And that's sort of what this book is about as well. And I'm just so excited. So we're going to talk about your book. You know, if you want more info, go back and listen to her episode and then come here. Let's get into it. What inspired you to even write this book in the first place?
You know, honestly, it was having written a book previously and knowing how cathartic it was for me personally was one thing. And I also saw how that experience, it helped me, it helped other people. And I wanted to do the same with this. I felt like I had been complicit in a lot of things that I realized were wrong, even though, you know, that wasn't my intent at the beginning. But once I realized it was wrong, it was really my way of kind of undoing what I had done So it's more of a, it's like a, an apology and a glimpse on what goes on, really kind of a cautionary tale for other people who think all this girl boss stuff and being at the top of an MLM is all just glitz and glamour and on the up and up.
I loved it. And it's so true. You know, I've talked to so many people who were in positions similar to yours, who were at the top, who did a lot of things that they didn't understand, that they regret now, and they've made amends. It's just such a relatable story. Like I the whole time I'm like nodding my head, reading this, going, yes, this is exactly, yes, absolutely, 100%. I can corroborate this. This happened to me too. I love your pyramid grows throughout the book and sort of explains, because when I make content, I try to make it educational and fun and not scary, because I have a lot of anxiety and ADHD. And like, if I think something's going to be scary, like I'm not even going to go there. I don't like confrontation and things like that. So I avoid it. And I think a lot of times people, when they get into the anti-MLM space, they don't want to be a part of it because like the word anti, they don't understand that there is compassion and that there is nuance within this space to let them know that we're not anti-people, we're anti the structure. And so I really loved how you made that non-threatening, how this just this small expansion, and you just sort of explained it in a way where somebody who had never been in that position could go, oh my gosh, like I get it. It's just you put us in this perspective in such a beautiful way that I think it's relatable even for the smallest fish.
Yeah, that's what that was my hope anyway, that people who had no idea what MLMs were could read it, and people who were in them and still loved them could read it and understand, and you know, everything in between. I made sure to really throw myself fully under the bus to say, like, these were the things that I did, I took part in. Maybe you did too, but I'm not trying to chastise you or tell you that you're bad. It's all the things that you are led to believe are okay in this system. And again, it's the system that's on trial here. It's not any one person. And that's another reason why I use, you know, composite characters in the book, and why I do illustrate that pyramid with actual people that you can see. And again, they're not real people, but so you can understand how these things grow and how they crumble so easily.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't understand, because when they're in their MLM, you know, they don't realize that there's hundreds upon hundreds of MLMs and hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of people doing the exact same thing they are in other avenues.
Right.
But it's very singular to them. Like, well, I'm just asking five people. It's not that big of a deal. But we don't see sort of that like exponential aspect where you pull it back. And I think that I loved the pyramid so much, because it's just, there's a lot of people that are visual, and sometimes you just don't, it just doesn't click until there's that one little thing. I get emails all the time for people going, I love your show, and I never saw myself in any single episode until, and then everything clicked. And I think sometimes like that, I just loved it. I just thought that's probably one of my favorite, one of my favorite things in the book is just how innocent and unsuspecting that pyramid is and what it becomes. It's a beautiful illustration.
That's really intentional, because I know, I can't say that I know anyone who has gotten into an MLM for any malintent, right? Everyone believes the dream, or even if it's a little dream, like, hey, you're going to get a discount on your products. Like, I don't care how small it is or how big it is. You wouldn't pay money to somebody or something if you didn't think you were getting something out of it, or helping someone, or doing something positive. So nobody joins thinking, hey, I'm going to do this because, you know, in 5 years, I want to make sure that hundreds and hundreds of people lose money. You know, I want to be complicit in gaslighting lots of people and telling them it was their fault. Nobody says that. And so to take that away and show all these experiences where, you know, hey, I exploited my, you know, cancer journey to sell shit. Like, to be really honest about, and here's why I did it. So that it's not just a, oh, well, I wouldn't do that and I wouldn't do that. It's like, it's all coming from the same place. It's all coming from this place of, we share our vulnerabilities and we talk about everything and we connect on this weird parasocial level that maybe isn't healthy, and this is why we do things we're not proud of.
Absolutely. The parasocial aspect, I think, is really important. From someone who is sort of, you are in this space, you have a ton of followers on Instagram. Do you experience that, this parasocial relationship with your followers?
Sometimes I've been, I think because of being in an MLM, I'm very careful to not put myself in a position where I'm like the guru or I'm the whatever. Like fangirling makes me really uncomfortable. I felt so uncomfortable in the MLM with that fangirling, but at the same time, it built upon itself. Was like, wow, I must be doing something right if all these people want to be doing the same thing. All these people want to take a picture with me. And then I'd have my friends who knew me in real life who were like, okay, this is so weird. They kind of bring me down to earth a little bit, like, you know how weird this is, right? And I'm like, yeah, but it felt good. It feeds that ego and makes you think that what you're doing is okay.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. I think I first started to notice that parasocial relationship while I was in MLM as a leader, where people are counting on me, like, oh, are you going to do your live tonight? I'm really looking forward to it. And it was that sort of stuff. And I was already in my life, sort of like feeling neglect and people like, quote unquote, needing me, even though my family did need me. But you're in a different mindset at that point. And having that and feeding that. And experiencing that while in a high demand situation and how it changed me. Like, I feel the same way about it now. Like, it is uncomfortable to me, the fangirling, and it's flattering, but at the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm just a normal person. Please don't put me on any kind of pedestal. I guarantee you I'm going to disappoint you at probably today. So, like, it's a very interesting thing. And I don't think it's something that comes up a lot. And so when it does come up, I like to ask what your experiences are on it, because I think most people feel the same way, that it's like, it's cool. I get people that are like, oh my God, I feel like we're best friends because you come with me on all my runs. And I was like, oh yeah, I have no idea who you are. I'm so flattered. I think it's really cool. But also at the same time, I'm also incredibly humbled by it. And I'm like, that's neat and also weird. Thank you. So it feels nice to know that you experience the same thing.
Yeah, and I think it comes with the territory when, I've written again, this is my second book. So like the first one I wrote, I went very deep into my life and my history, and there was a lot of traumatic things in there. So, you read a book that gives details of someone's life, and of course you feel that's the point. Like, oh, I feel less alone. I feel this connection. And for me, that's been so important of separating out where like where I end or where someone else begins, and good and bad, because what someone takes from my story or takes from my opinion or takes from my advice online, I'm very careful to make sure it's like that is about them and what they take from it, good or bad. If someone doesn't like what I'm sharing, like again, that has very little to do with me as long as I'm not conducting myself in a way that is somehow dangerous, whatever, which I think the MLM, that's what it really highlights. And it's all set up that way. The MLM is all set up to have these hierarchies, this very like royalty type structure. Even like you said, when I was a leader, like that idea of leader is loaded, right? Like who's your leader? I'm the leader.
Absolutely.
Like, where does that come from, right? And that's even cringy in itself when you look back on it. It's automatically putting people in silos and in tiers so that you, like literal tiers, like crying, and in tiers like sections where you've got to reach the next pinnacle, got to reach the next thing. And when they do that, there's never an end to what you can be reaching for. There's always a next rung. So it's done all intentionally to make you jealous of the people or envious of the people on top, to make you assume the people below you, beneath you, not doing as well, again, are beneath you, are not working as hard. So there's a hierarchy that's just built in.
The hierarchical structure, it's even built into sort of the parasocial relationship. Yeah, like even using the word leader, right? Like I use that word and I remember looking back and like using it and being like, oh, well, it's for leaders. Like with an attitude like, well, you wouldn't understand because you're like, you don't have anybody because you're like not a leader yet. And I remember the very separate but equal aspect of MLM, and that always bothered me while I was in. Always, well, you can come to this, but like you didn't earn it, so like you don't get to do the extra stuff. You can just sort of watch and be jealous. Yeah. It's really interesting how giving language to things, how you see this. And I think it's just really interestingly highlighted in your book. I don't know. It's like we have Ponzi-nomics, which is a really great like history of MLM. And it's very like, you know, scholarly and like cut and dry and factual. But then we have almost the juxtaposition is your book, but in the same framework of being like, this is what the truth is, but it's the opposite. It has emotion and it has relatability and it has, you can put yourself in your shoes. Even if, like I said, even if you're a small fish, because when you join an MLM, even if you're only joining, like you said, for a discount or for like friends or whatever, there's still, you can't deny it. It's still a tiny spark. They put it in you. And whether or not you fan that flame and like create a fire from that spark is fine. But there's also in an MLM, we also are like given carte blanche to just dream as wildly as possible. Like, oh, that's good. But what else? More, more, more. So even that tiny little spark, even if you are ever just a small fish and you never go anymore, there's still that dream of that. What if? What if I made a video that went viral and a bunch of people joined my team and I became a leader and I was a leader and I got to go to these things? Like there's still, even if it's not a driving force, like there's still that little bit of daydream when you're sitting there hoping for a sale where you're like, what if I was that? And so that even like fuels you and keeps you there. Even if you're not that person, even if you're just that small fish, you felt that feeling. And so it's very easy to slide into your shoes and to relate to your story.
Right. And if you are someone who you're like, oh, I just buy stuff from Pampered Chef or whatever. Cool. Like, none of this would relate to me or whatever. Once you are in the system in any fashion, I know that I reached out to my customers and bugged the crap out of them to join. Hey, you know, you could get a bigger discount. Hey, this month we've got the special. Hey, this month, hey, like you are in and you are going to be spammed. Like it doesn't matter. And so that the expectation that the person you join, the person you buy from, or whatever, the person you get the discount from, you are now a cog in their wheel. You are on their list. You are in their crosshairs and you are going to be marketed to. And when you are in that position where you are the leader, you assume because you've been indoctrinated this way that everybody must want to be where you are. Like, why wouldn't everyone want to do this? How could someone buy something from you and not want to get a bigger discount? How could someone join and not want to build a team? How could someone build a team and not want to, like, there's never an end to what you think people want to do. So even if you are that person, you're like, hey, I just joined for the discount and, you know, it's kind of fun or whatever. You're still perpetuating that, whether you want to or not. Like, I think that's important to realize.
That even the tiniest cog is still a cog that's churning along and perpetuating the bigger machine. It's true. Even when you're just like, I'm just going to buy a $20 lipstick to support my sister, or I'm just going to like try this workout for like a month to support my friend. Like,
yeah,
it causes a lot of harm. And I don't think people see that. And then when you try to explain it, it's so big and yet so nuanced at the same time. It's really hard to explain it.
Because of course you want to support your friend. I want you to support your friends.
Of course.
But that's not the problem. The problem is what you're doing is not support. Buying the DVD how much money of that is really going to your friend and what's she doing with it? And is that keeping her more trapped in the system? Who else is the money going to? Mostly upline, mostly to the company. So if you think, oh, I really want to help my friend, the best thing you can do is give her $20. Granted, she may buy something from the company, but like whatever she does with it, she does with it. Or give someone a gas gift card or a gift card for a meal or something. Do something that actually helps, because buying something from their commercial cult is going to keep them more trapped in it, whether you think it's detrimental or not. It's the illusion of
Yeah.
health. It really is.
It really is the illusion of help. It's putting a Band-Aid on like a gaping wound and being like, I hope this helps. It's like it doesn't.
Yeah.
It
No.
adds another hole in that boat that's already sinking. You're like, I just gotta shovel the water out faster. That's all. I'm just not doing it good enough. And it
Yeah.
keeps people trapped a lot longer. So let's talk about the process of writing this book called Hey Hun. What was the Your favorite process of writing this book?
Probably picking out the chapters and the chapter names. So like figuring out there was no end to what I could talk about. There was no end, but I had to like categorize it. I had to put it in sections. I had to categorize it. That was probably my favorite part, was outlining it, figuring out how it would go. Because from there, once I really started in each section and talking about putting it in chronological order, then I could really get into each chapter and it would just take me other places. Like, hey, here's, this is what happened during COVID. And oh, by the way, here's all of the information that the FTC put out during COVID. And oh, by the way, here's all this PPP loan fraud. And by the way, by the way, by the way, 100,000 words later. Doing that, I think, really helped me see where the book was going to go. So that was my favorite part of it.
Everything is just so intentional and so brilliant and so funny. And I think anybody who has been in the MLM like gets all of the little inside jokes and all of the little tongue-in-cheek, all the little Easter eggs. They were great, all of them. And anybody who's not in might miss them, but it's not so obvious that if you don't know that you, but it's just fun. I love them.
Well, and I think everybody's seen I try to explain it in terms of, like that time of the month. Well, I mean, everyone knows what that phrase means, but MLMs at the end of the month, numbers in. And then when you start to think as a consumer, oh, like that's why Shelly reaches out to me asking me if I need to place a bulk order or if I need this eye cream or whatever at the end of the month. Oh, that's why I see all these sales at the end of the month. Oh, and so you can kind of then relate it back to, as even as a consumer, oh, that makes a lot of sense. All these titles and trips and everything at the end of the month, like you've got that deadline, that finish line.
The very predictable behavior of how to rope people into either buying from you or your downline purchasing things to hit numbers. And it was a very
Three
predictable
spots
thing.
left. That's always my favorite one. I've
Oh,
only got a
yeah.
few spots left. It's like, does anybody actually believe that?
One time it was really funny. Like I saw a thread and it said something like, I only have three spots left for the next three people that comment, and like the fourth person commented and said, ah, just missed it. And the hun was like, no, I can make room. It's fine. Like sort of
I'll
like
make room. I'll never say
backpedaling.
no.
Right.
God.
And it was very funny. Like it was very obvious that the fourth person was just teasing. But
Yeah.
the behavior is so robotic and so predictable that they knew exactly what was going to happen when they said that.
Totally
But,
guilty.
right? What was the hardest aspect of writing this book?
So honestly, the hardest thing I think for me was talking about all of the, white supremacy, racism, all of that stuff, because A, I'm a white chick. And I address that in the book, obviously, why, like I'm a white person talking about this, but I couldn't ignore it. I was grateful for my publisher for pushing me to kind of find the story in the story, because there's a lot more there that I think people don't realize. Like, one can look, there's these reward trips and see that everybody's white, and you can kind of make inferences from that. But why is it like that? And why is that harmful? And why do structures like this harm people of color? And also, why are they not accessible to people of color? It was important to talk about, but that was the hardest part for me, because I had to do a lot of research and read some things that were uncomfortable for me to know that I was again, I was complicit in all of this stuff, and still am. Like, white supremacy is the sea we're all swimming in. It's not like any of us can opt out of it. So how do we make things more equitable and fair and all of that? And I truly believe, after doing that research and so much research on that and MLMs, that there is truly no way for MLMs to be socioeconomically, racially equitable in any way.
No, it's all intentional. It's everything is intentional. I think when you start digging and you start looking at things and you're like, oh, wow. And I think it is really important to have the difficult conversations. And, certain types of white supremacy have come up in conversations when we've had different guests on the show and talking about different racial issues within MLMs. Just off the top of my head, I can think about just shade ranges in makeup companies not being varied to really any sort of people of color. Like, oh, you're tanner than tan. Sorry. That's
Yeah,
all we
or
have.
hair
Hair
products
products as
that,
well.
for ethnic hair, it's all for, white chick hair. That's really
Absolutely.
it.
And I think a lot of people will, when they hear like white supremacy or they hear the term race or racism, they immediately go to the most extreme. No one is doing that. Well, it's okay. Like that, microaggressions are real, and they're just little, they're like compliment sandwiches. But they're racially driven. And it's little things like that. And it's these little microaggressions within MLM that we have to talk about that come up and that we unpack and that we're guilty of, especially as white people. Absolutely, we're raised in it. There are so many things that I have had to unpack and address, and having those conversations and bringing it up, because I'm the curse breaker. I'm like, that's like racist, right? And I don't get invited to a lot of things. it's wild to have to be that and to see it in the MLM and to be able to have a platform like writing a book like yours or having a podcast like this to be able to start talking about those things in a way that's, again, not scary. Because they're topics that have to be talked about. They need to be addressed. They need to be pointed out. But again, like we have to do it in a way that we can't scare away the demographic of the people that actually need to hear it. Because we can't just keep preaching to the choir. People that are listening going, Roberta, we know this. It's the other people that aren't listening that we need to create the education here that the listeners and the readers can take it with them. And when they see it, they can say, well, actually, that's a microaggression. And this is how you can say that instead, where it's not offensive to people.
And that's, again, like if you're talking about the same stuff, like that's when you're siloed. That's when you're not, you're not reaching out to, again, other people who have been involved in this and listening to other stories. And ultimately, I think for anybody, when you hear something, read something that makes you go, oh, ooh, like makes you get defensive immediately, that's when you ask yourself why. So even when I made the announcement for my book, I put the Publisher's Marketplace announcement and I had the title in the book, which has supremacy in it. Instead of anyone going to a dictionary and opening it and seeing what supremacy actually means, which then you can't deny it because, again, all the people at the top are women who are white, or the CEOs who are white, who are men, whatever. Like, hello. But if that makes you feel, ooh, ick. Like, why? Ask yourself why that makes you feel so gross. Or when you're reading, like, why do I immediately get defensive about this? Ask yourself why. And the ne you know, the most negative things I've heard about the book are from people who probably will never read it because they're entrenched, or people who immediately see something and they're like, well, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. It's like, okay, maybe you didn't. But this is my experience and something that I'm telling you I saw and heard a lot. So maybe it's around you, maybe you're ignoring it. But the defensiveness for me is almost the first admission of guilt. And it was funny because I wrote an essay for today that came out a couple of weeks ago, and it was about my cancer story and how I incorporated it into my MLM. And someone who I'll just say was a relative of someone who was in my MLM commented on it and was like, I don't know where you got that information. Nobody in my company does this. This is all you. This was you doing it, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, your relative had me train on her platform about vulnerability. Like, so it was just that person was not willing to see that not only was it absolutely coached But you know, that person's relative was one who had me come train their team on it. So it's just, you're not willing to see it if you don't see it. It's not that it doesn't exist, it's that you're not willing to look. And the defensiveness is like an admission of guilt.
Absolutely. I think that the defensiveness is an admission of guilt. And it's sitting with their cognitive dissonance again, right? It's like they've been trained. They believe they've invested thousands of dollars, years of their time into this cause, this company, this business, this idea. And then here comes an article from someone that they used to like, respect, clearly still follow in today about very vulnerable. How you used this vulnerability and you're admitting it and saying, I did this and I'm sorry and this is why. And it's still happening in other places. And this is one of the reasons I wrote this. And to get that pushback, it's like she's seeing a fact which is in direct correlation and opposition of what she has based the last however long of her life. What do you do in that moment, right? You either go, oh my God, what have I been a part of? Or you say, not me, not mine, not me. We don't do that. That's not, I cannot believe you, Emily, that you would do this. This is, how dare you? You
Yeah,
know,
it's
and
the
it's this
othering.
pushback. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so easy to other. Oh, that's them. It's that company. It's the, I mean, how many times do we hear that? Oh, it's different. Our company's different. It's that person. It's that product. It's that person who made the lawsuit. It really didn't, you know, make their hair fall out. Whatever it is, it's never our fault. If you can leave the smallest amount of room for the possibility that maybe it might be a little bit your fault. That's when you can actually enact change, and that's when you can actually start to be, you know, a human and not a robot who just repeats things that their company says, right? I think it's really hard when someone talks about something that you believe so much in, even when you realize it's a lie. And I say this as someone who's been there. Once I started realizing the dream I was selling was fake. The dream I was selling was not coming true for other people. It was coming true for me. Because it was not coming true for other people, it was really hard to turn around and admit that I had been wrong. It's very hard.
I think it's probably one of the hardest things to do. It's one of the first steps, admitting that you were in something that's wrong, bad, and getting out of it. And I think that's why a lot of people stay in it, or they just, well, I just realized I wasn't a salesperson. I just let my membership expire or whatever, because it's easier to just like look at that box of junk in the corner and just sort of tape it up and throw it in the closet and shut the door and like never look at it again. Because like, oh, it was just like a year of my life, no big deal. And to not unpack everything that's a part of it, especially when there is this, the FOMO, the manipulation, the white supremacy, the us versus them, the culty stuff, just the financial devastation. Like there's so much and there's so many other things. I've likened it to like throwing a little pebble in a pond. And you really only see like the first one or two ripples, but there's still ripples. There's still people and things that are affected by what you believe to be small decisions that a lot of people don't really ever talk about or unpack, which is why content like yours, the book, is so important to show really all of the sides of what joining something like this really entails. Like if you really knew how horrible it was, would you sign on the dotted line? Would you? You know, people go like, oh, it's a small business. No, it's not. It's like a
It's actually not, yeah.
198 billion dollar industry, MLM. It's like that's not a small business by any
No,
means.
no. And the word salad, like all of that double speak that you're an entrepreneur, you're a mompreneur, and you have a small business. And they malign corporations like, oh, corporate America sucks, 9 to 5 sucks. Meanwhile, you are an independent contractor for a huge multi-million or billion-dollar corporation. Congratulations. Oh, but you have a small bit. Well, no, you don't. You don't have a small business. So how do you align that? And right off the bat, it's like that doesn't match, but you are told to say these things and you just blindly believe it because it sounds good, right? And everyone else says it and it must be okay. I think that is the scariest thing for me looking back is how I blindly believed so many things as a very smart person, like who went to college and had an advanced degree and a master's degree, like, and I really got sucked in to a lot of those things, repeating a lot of those things. You know, I had the company name on my license plate, for God's sake. Like, I was that person. I would have gotten a tattoo of the company name on my body had someone asked me to, right? Looking back and seeing how I got so roped in. Yeah, I mean, it's throwing that pebble in and then realizing, oh shit, I got to drain the pond and now I've got to shovel all these pebbles out. Like, getting out is not as easy.
No, and that's absolutely true. Getting out is not as easy. It's really easy to get in. It's like a marriage, right? Like, getting married is easy. You can go to Vegas and just like get married and be like, we got married. Like, it's great. Getting divorced is not as easy as getting married.
Right.
There's a lot
Right.
of
And
stuff that gets put in.
how many people stay because it's harder than to leave, right? It's really a good
It
example
is actually, we're going to
of,
use that as an example right now.
yeah.
Anybody who's married right now, think about it. Think about if you found out overnight that your partner was a pyramid scheme who was just bilking you for money and damaging tons of people. And you're like, I got to get out. Could you get out today? Could you just be like, I packed up, I left, and we're good? Would it take you a while to figure it out, to make a plan to, well, I gotta get a job. I gotta save some money. I gotta figure that out. I gotta find a place to live. Like, there are so many things that we don't think about. When I get these comments, when people are like, it's so easy to quit, it's so easy to leave. It's so much. And you get these comments, I'm sure you get them too. That's like, it's so, like, I don't know why you're being so dramatic. It's so easy. You just cancel.
Right. Well, if they don't even build in the fact that once you join, you have 1,000 uplines on your ass. Right? If you even hint of like, oh, I think maybe this isn't for me, who cares what the cancellation policy of the company is? Doesn't matter if it's, I think ours was a year. I think you had a year to return your, business kit. That didn't matter. By the time you're in, then you have your upline, like, please don't quit. Give it more time. You have everyone, all this toxic positivity. You're getting gifts at home and stuff. They don't even, that doesn't even account for all of that. People like blowing sunshine up your ass, right? And so to say, oh, it's easy to cancel. Well, yeah, what about the friend who brought you in and now they might not talk to you anymore? How easy is that? That's not easy.
That's a whole nother thing. The excommunication part was the hardest for me. And I think that's probably one of the most common answers at the end when I ask what the hardest lesson is, was that those people weren't my friends, that those people didn't care about me, that I wasn't actually part of their club and their clique and their community, that I was very easily kicked out, blocked, and then lied about. Like, and everybody believed it because they were made to be this enemy. And it's like, it was so hard. And it's something people don't talk about. And I really wish that the people that swear that it's so easy, like, never have to go through half of what someone went through when they leave an MLM and how devastating it can be.
Right. And even my kids who, again, I went on vacations with a lot of people who I knew in the MLM. And when they might ask, they'll see a picture or something and be like, oh, how come we don't go to her house anymore? We don't see her anymore. And explaining to them, well, I don't work for the same company anymore. And their faces are just like, it just shows how stupid that is. Because if I quit any other job or left any other school or whatever, you can still have a friendship. But they're inextricably linked. That, again, it's that parasocial relationship that links. It's like proximity and friendship are really blurred, and the company is like your community. And if you leave the community, you cannot be friends with people anymore. It's really odd.
So I made an Instagram story and I said, hey, I'm talking to Emily today. Does anybody have any questions? And Savvy of Savvy Writes Books, who's amazing,
Yes.
she reached out and said, I do have a question for her. So it is really great. It's a kind of a lot, and there's a few questions in here, but I know you can handle it. So this is what Savvy sent. Okay, here is my question. In Robert Fitzpatrick's Ponzi Nomics, Toward the end, he talked about how he decided to self-publish because many agents and big five publishers were looking for a message of hope, but he really wanted to portray the reality of despair caused by MLMs and their hold on the government. I'm wondering how Emily's process of pitching her book to a publisher was similar and how it was different to Robert's. I know she went with a publisher instead of self-publishing, so I'm wondering how she got the publisher on board with the anti-MLM message and if she had to compromise anything at all. And also, what advice she has for those of us publishing books with an anti-MLM angle.
Such a great question. And okay, so there's lots of layers here. So had I gone with a big five publisher, I would not have been able to write the book that I did. So when I was shopping around the book proposal, so when you have a nonfiction book, you write a book proposal. So when I was shopping around the book proposal to agents, so you query agents first who would might want to represent the book and sell it to a publisher. That's how traditional publishing works. The feedback I got from agents was, I love this. I would read this. I don't think I can sell it to a publisher because publishers are also very afraid of getting sued. And many of them have published books from people who are really deep in MLM. So there's a lot of money tied up in that. So when I was working with a good friend, and she actually has her own publishing company now, Kristen McGinnis, she was acting as my agent and she was helping set up Row House Publishing, which is a Black-owned, woman-owned publisher, new publisher as of last year, and is distributed through Simon and Schuster. So all of the same distribution, you can get the same, basically same number of eyeballs on your book, but I had this great publisher who is all about publishing stories about, people who can't share their stories. Like they're all about sharing stories from marginalized identities. Obviously, I'm a white chick, but I'm talking about something that really does impact lots of communities. So they really encouraged me. First of all, yes, you have to write this. And not only are we going to write what you want to write, but we're going to encourage you to write even more, which is, honestly, I, as a white woman, was concerned about writing about white supremacy, right? Because I'm not like an expert in anti-racism or anything like that. But I think it's important for white people to talk about white supremacy when they are, we're all swimming in it, right? It's a sea, we're all swimming in it, we're in it. And it's important for us to talk about it when we're complicit in harming other people. So they really pushed me to write the story deeper in the story. And when I did more research, I realized I had to tell it from this perspective as well. So not only was my publisher not only willing to tell the story that I wanted to tell, but they pushed me even further to tell the deeper polemic and, systemic issues that go into MLMs, which I may not have done. And again, had I gone with another publisher, which I may not have even been able to get a book deal because they would have been probably too afraid or they would have diluted down my message. So there's
Yeah.
that whole like
No, I
part of
love
it.
that. I absolutely love
Yeah.
that. Bravo to Row House. Absolutely. I follow them on Instagram. I love everything that they're putting out. I love their message. Just such an incredible publishing house. And I am so excited to follow their journey as a new publisher and to see all of the incredible things that they've got coming up because they already have a lot of really great stuff coming up, including your
Yeah,
book.
absolutely. And then to the second part of Savvy's question, I hope that this is something that helps other people feel less scared to share their stories. I think self-publishing is incredible. And I think there's a huge untapped market of these kind of stories. I mean, we see lots of MLM people self-publishing their own How to Be a Boss Babe books, right? And so
Right.
why not balance it out with stories of why not to be a boss babe? This is my actual story of what happened. I would love to see more stories out there, but maybe this will help other publishers feel like, okay, this is something people want to hear about. Let's talk more about this.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point because we talk about things that right now are deemed pretty controversial, right? Like we're going against the norm. We're talking about sitting in our white supremacy and going, look, you're swimming in it. Just look, open your eyes, see how it affects you because it does. And we can ignore it and be like, I'm not like this, but we were raised that way. And it's just sort of like
their natural, like, inherent bias and like microaggressions that we have to break through. I think it's just so important. And by connecting those things in your book the way that you did, I think it really creates a non-threatening education to be like, oh my gosh, I did do that. I didn't realize that that's rooted in white supremacy. Oh my gosh, I know better now, because we just need to be better than who we are the day before, right? We just want to always be better. And I absolutely love that you are creating a message as a white woman that has so much intersectionality with other things that it opens up this conversation for people who are scared to have it in a non-confrontational way.
And I think also, if you read this and you're like, well, I still like selling these products, I still like being in the MLM, it's fun for me. Like, I'm not telling you what to do. But there's going to be something that you read that maybe you'll think, ooh, gosh, I did get asked to share my story last year about how my mom died, and that didn't feel good. So next time something like that happens, I'm not going to do that. Or yeah, I did reach out to a friend who just had a baby, and did, just sharing the stories in a way that it's not black and white, and everyone's going to have their different path, but maybe you can just step back a little bit and reevaluate how you're participating in this entire culture that I believe is harmful. And,
Yes.
how do we make it less harmful if you still want to participate in it, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I personally don't support MLMs, but I know there are a lot of people on the show that are in them or have to support them for various reasons. And again, like, that's my privilege showing to be like, well, I just quit. Not everybody can quit. Like, we have to realize that too. And not everybody's 100% anti-MLM right out the gate. Sometimes it takes people 20 years to figure it out. And we have to make space for people to be humans. We're humans. We make mistakes. It's literally what we do. We error. And that's how you become a better person. Nobody is infallible. You are infallible. That is what it is. You make mistakes and you learn to be better. And again, I think there are going to be a lot of people that read your book and might feel that uncomfortableness, that cognitive dissonance where they're like, oh my gosh, I did this. She's talking about me. She's talking to me. I'm relating to this so well. And that's intentional. We want you to sit in that, right? Like, you got to sit in that and unpack that. We got to unpack that. All of us, especially white ladies that think we know better, because we don't. We really don't.
We definitely don't.
If anything I've learned in my life is that I don't know better than anybody.
Yeah. Well, me allowing myself to not be right has been what has helped me through every challenge I've had. Sobriety, getting out of my MLM, a fight with my husband, like any little thing where I leave just the minute possibility. What if I'm not 100% right? And that's not admitting you're wrong. It's not. It's just saying, what else could be true here? What else could be more true? What could be less true? What am I right about? What am I wrong about? You can't learn if you assume everything you know is 100% accurate.
Right. There's so much nuance in life, and we're getting away from black and white thinking because that's cultic. It's not
So culty.
yes or no, left or right, up or down, red or blue. It's not like that. And if you
No.
live like that, these are the things that we're talking about, is living in the nuance, stepping out, getting into the gray, realizing that not everything is just one thing. And when you're talking about that, like having the different nuances of experiences, it made me think of Inside Out. Everything was like, that's a joy experience or that's an anger experience. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, at the end, you realize that some of these emotions are joy and anger, that they can coexist together. And it's that sort of thing. There's not just one answer in this nuance of trying to figure things out and unpack things and unlearn things and be better. And some things could be right and wrong at the same time. You have to really be open to, I guess, questioning things. I mean, that's what we talk about here, like question things.
Critical thinking, it's a skill that we all need to work on all the time. I mean, every day I have to remind myself of the same things I remind myself of. I'm not a perfect person either, and I will continue to do things that piss people off or whatever. Like, we're all going to do that, right? We're all going to make mistakes. It's what do you do after? Like, what do you change to better protect yourself to not do those things in the future, right?
Absolutely. I am so excited. So for everybody who is just enjoying this conversation and wants to continue it by reading your book, it is really good. You guys, you have to read it. Tell us where we can find your book, how we can pre-order, and also remind people why it's so important to pre-order books.
Yes, thank you. So pre-orders are so important. And you know, what's funny is someone reached out to me the other day who was reading the book. And she's like, now I understand why you hate selling shit. Because she's always on me about, why don't you post about your programs more? Why don't you post about your book more? And I'm like, see, because when you're in an MLM, like selling then becomes hard and cringy. So this is my least favorite part of book publishing, is like marketing myself and telling people, go buy my book. But the first thing is, authors put a ton of work into, I mean, years, research, hours, time, blood, sweat, and tears go into writing a book. And it's something you can get for between $5 and $30. Like, it's a very inexpensive thing that you can get for yourself. And the support is huge. So pre-orders are important because they show the bookseller, whoever it is, you know, whether it's Amazon, Bookshop, local booksellers, they show them that, oh, this book is in high demand. We're going to place a bigger order for it. And they feature it more. They put it in like the new and notable section. And that's what gets you put on bestseller lists, which then leads to the success of the book. Like, pre-orders are the most important part of a success in a book. And so always, if you have an author that you love, if you have a book that you're excited to come out, like, buy it, and it will show up literally on launch day. It's like buying yourself a future present. So you can pre-order it literally anywhere your local bookstore can get it. Always support local. I always appreciate people supporting local. Of course, you can get it on all the big retailers too, but literally anywhere you prefer to buy your books, it is there. You can pre-order it, and I would appreciate it and love you forever.
And what day does it launch?
May 30th. It will arrive in your mailbox.
I am just so proud of you, Emily. And I just love that we have become friends, and you're just such an inspiration.
Oh, well, feelings mutual. I appreciate it.
All right. So everybody, make sure you get her book, you pre-order it, and you read it, because I'm assuming this book's going to come up a lot this year, because it's going to come up a lot this year. You guys, go get it. Thank you so much, Emily. You are wonderful.
Thanks, Roberta.
Thank you so much for listening to Life After MLM. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. And follow us on social media at Life After MLM Podcast and my advocacy at The Real Roberta Blevins. You can find all of the links to the social accounts in our show notes. And if you just listened to that incredible story and you thought, oh my God, I have a story just like that that needs to be told, hit me up, therealrobertablevins@gmail.com. I would love to have you on the show to share your story and start your journey in life after MLM. See you next time, Hans.